This project is supported by funding from the Institute for Diversity and Civic Life, made possible by a grant from the Henry Luce Foundation.
For some background, the Dallas Mexican American Historical League, DMAL, is a 501c3 organization dedicated to researching, collecting, and preserving the historical and cultural experiences of Mexican Americans in Dallas from the early 1900s to the present.
Through DMAL, the Emerging Historian Cohort is a contingent of young professionals assembled by DMAL lifetime member Rosemary Hinojosa in order to pass on the legacy of preserving our local history to the next generation of historians.
Nos puso la vida. Dejé todo, mis amigos, mi familia y mi ilusión. Y aunque allá he pasado los mejores años de mi vida, decir esto da tristeza, pero acá estamos mejor. Pero acá estamos mejor. Como extraño.
In this episode of the Chronicles of Dallas Barrios podcast, Victoria Ferrell Ortiz conducts an interview with immigration activist Sandra Avalos. This episode is transparent in that it is unedited to show the beginning and ending portions of an oral history interview. At the time the interview was conducted, it was made in association with a Nuestro Cliff exhibit.
So, what would you like me to refer to you as today, Sandra?
Sandra's fine.
Just Sandra? Okay. So I'm going to start recording the oral history. Do I have your permission to record this interview today?
Yes.
Okay. So your name is Sandra Avalos, and today's date is April 7th, 2021, Central Standard Time. I'm interviewing... I'm Victoria Ferrell Ortiz, and this is for the Oak Cliff Exhibit Project. This interview is being recorded using Zoom, and I'm located in South Oak Cliff, and the participant is located at LNESC. Is that where you are?
Yes.
Yes, across the street from Griner in Oak Cliff. To begin, could you start off by establishing your connection to when did you happen to move here?
So my family migrated from Michoacán, Mexico. We started and I traveled in back in May of 1996. And then we finally arrived to Oak Cliff in August of 1996. So it took us a while to get here, but we finally made it. And just in time for school, actually, just in time to sign up for classes at John Ely Bryan.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in, when we arrived, we were actually right next to the VA, the VA that's here in Dallas. After a while, my dad started looking for an actual place for us to stay. And at the time we were right next to the train station. So there's a train station off of Keast. And so that's where my parents started renting a duplex, and that's where we would live. At the time we were around a couple of houses. Now that community actually, it's not all fully there. Some of the houses are gone because now a Walgreens is there.
Could you tell us about your family?
So when we first arrived, I am the oldest of four at the time. It was myself, my brother, and the two younger sisters. After that, we moved into Volga. And in 1997, my parents had Maria. And then in 2001, Yesenia was born. So I'm the oldest of six at that time. And then my father was later arrested and deported, and he actually stayed in Mexico and has another son now, and he's 4 years old. He's about to be 4 years old. So I'm actually the oldest of seven now. And so not much connection as far as with him, just unfortunately, because of my immigration status, I am not able to travel to Mexico. And so therefore I'm not able to go and visit my dad and my younger brother. But as far as with here, with the ones that are here, we're definitely close. We grew up very close. My mom, it was just, after my dad was deported, she made sure that she was with us as much as she could. But as we got older and we started buying houses, each of us kind of started going slowly into kind of the suburbs, just because it's cheaper. Actually, believe it or not, living in Dallas is a little more expensive than what some of us can afford. So my brother's more in the Duncanville, DeSoto area. My sister's actually about to move to Lancaster at the end of the month. And my mom ended up moving out by past Corsicana. There's an area called Stemmen. And it's just the land is much, much cheaper there. So she was able to get like 30 acres for like maybe 55,000. And so now she has cows and all of that. So that's where we are as far as my family and my siblings.
I feel like that's a lot of people's stories, you know, like I'm here in Oak Cliff. I live in my mom's house, you know, because of what you just said, rent is so expensive here in Dallas. Like it's my dream to own a house in Oak Cliff. And truly, I feel like I was not the right age and not at the right stage in my career to be able to buy a house in Oak Cliff. Like that's not the way it's going to go down for me. And it sucks because I love it so much. It's my community, my home. But I appreciate you sharing about that. Can you talk about one of your fondest childhood memories? Or it could be several memories,
more than one. So I remember when I saw that question, the first thing that came to my mind is the first home that my dad was purchasing. This is right before he got deported for the first time. And we had what I thought was a big backyard. A huge backyard. My parents have bought swings and we will go outside and we will get sheets and we will be built a tent and we'll be just sleeping out in the backyard. And then we'll come inside and we'll play teachers and we will use at the end of the year our teachers will let us take our books home, so we will play teachers with those books, or then we'll play restaurants. And my brother will cook some quesadillas for us. Or at the time, he'll cut up tortillas and put egg on them. And later, years later, I came to find out that's actually a dish. It's called migas. But when we were little, we just thought it was just us cutting tortillas and putting eggs on it and didn't think much about it. Or whenever we would do, we would just put egg on top of a tortilla. And later, I came to find out it's huevos rancheros. And we're like, what? So it was just things that we saw other people do and we would do them, but we never thought much about it. And so just those connections that you built with your siblings growing up. I remember there was one time we were jumping on top of the couches. And you know the traditional Mexican moms, they have the frames that they buy from this catalog. And then my mom had like these little birds that went along with this painting. It was two little birds. And when we were jumping on the bed, we hit it and the bird flew off and it broke. And we were like, oh my God, we have to replace it. We have to replace it. And so we looked at the catalog and it said $11.99. We're like, how are we going to get $11.99? So we remember we went into the kitchen and we made lemonade. And so we were like, we're going to go around to our neighbors and we're going to be selling lemonade. And so we did that. Do we collect $11.99? No. I mean, we only went to maybe like four or five houses. But just that experience of how weedy we were. the experience of like, at that time, I would watch Full House. And so I remember watching the sisters. And so for me, it was like, I remember there was a part in one of their rooms where they had like a sitting area next to the window, and we didn't have it. So what we did, we just put a bunch of pillows and we'll sit around the window just like that. And so just the connection that you built with your siblings and coming from a big family, I think that's something that I always treasure, And I noticed that now that I have my own daughter, I feel like I kind of robbed her from that. I kind of robbed her from the experiences of having multiple siblings and having those connections and learning opportunities and just so many things that comes along from a bigger family. But then again, I can't afford having a big family, you know? So it's like, I would love it, but I also know what it came along with. I know that it came along with sacrifices that my parents had to do. You know, it came with, and I always told myself, I never wanted to have my kiddos feel like I was, as far as when it was Christmas time, we didn't have as many, you know, Christmas gifts and all of that. And so, the struggle that both my parents had to go through just to put food on the table sometimes. And so I always told myself that, no, that was not going to be me. I was going to make sure that whatever kids I had, I was going to be able to provide fully the experience of what I thought was fully upbringing and making sure she went off to college and all of that.
I really enjoyed those stories of hearing you talk about like jumping on couches. You're getting me flashbacks of me like jumping on couches. I feel like that's a story so many people can relate to, you know, like as a kid breaking something and your heart just going like, oh no, I'm gonna get in so much trouble. That was really funny. What did a normal day look like for you at home?
So when we first arrived to Mexico, my parents worked a lot. Most of them worked jobs. And at the time, they worked at a Lubies. That actually was a Lubies that's close to my house now. But unfortunately, that Lubies is gone now. And it's actually a funeral home, interesting enough. So they will work there. And then and the Lubies is up like 35 and on Apple. And so when that's a funeral home. But that's what they would work at. So we knew all the food from Luby's. We grew up eating all of it. And it's actually, I enjoyed it. That was one of the things we loved doing is going to the restaurant and eating. But when we didn't, we would be at the house. At first we had a babysitter, but it was just not working out as far as like the babysitting and taking care of four kids. And it became kind of expensive to the point that like I made the decision at like a grown adult at 11 years old that I can take care of my siblings at home and save us that buck. And so that's what I did. We were at our home, and at first it was just kind of like coming home from school, you know, making sure we heat up the food so we can eat and doing homework. And then because of a neighbor we had, and she saw how big our family was, she introduced us to a group of nuns called the Missionaries of Charity. So the Missionaries of Charity is actually a group of nuns that live right next to St. James Catholic Church. So that's the church I grew up in. And so she introduced us about going over there and getting some food. But us, we will go and we'll actually help bring the boxes of food together. And then after that, like distribute the food. And then once they were done, well, then we will get our food and go home. And then after that, they're like, oh yeah, we have a summer program. And I was like, oh, well, what is that? And they're like, well, we do activities for students. Like, of course, you're going to learn your prayers and you learn about, you know, Catholicism. But then we also have field trips every Friday. And we'll take you out swimming and we're going to take it to the Dallas Arboretum. And that's how I was introduced into the Dallas Arboretum and to the Fort Worth Zoo and all of that. And so, and then after that, it came part of our routine. We'll get home, do our chores or whatever, and then we'll go with the nuns. And whatever was going on with the nuns, that's what we were doing. We were doing CCD classes, we were doing the summer program, you know, during the summer. We were helping with the boxes every Wednesday. And then either the nuns would take us to visit other churches or go to retreats. And so that became my world growing up through my middle school and elementary and high school. And that honestly, that's what kept me out of trouble. And what led into later be what I discovered to be my passion and my career path. Because at that time, I first thought I was going to be a nun. I hardcore thought I was going to be a nun. But then I remember one of my mentors was just a nun. And she was like, I don't think you're going to be a nun. She's like, if you go in there, I see something in you and you're going to, what she called in Spanish, revolotear el gallinero. You're going to cause commotion in there. So I don't know if we're ready for you. And so I at that point, I didn't understand what she meant. And years later, now where I am right now, she made completely sense. She saw something in me that I didn't see it at the time, but she was like, no. And I remember she said something. She was like, just remember the last thing. Because when they only, the nuns only can stay for 4 years. And that was one that was truly, I care so much about. And then the last thing she told me was like, with great power comes great responsibility. So remember that, and remember that you're a natural leader, and you can definitely make great impact, but that comes with some hardships. And so I experienced a lot with the nuns. I experienced my dad's arrest, his deportation, and now what was next for our family. And so there was a point where we had to we truly completely depend on them. We stayed in their shelter. But then I learned so much about, you know, helping others, the resources available, the importance of mental health, like all of this came. And so having them in my life impacted me to who I am right now, you know. And unfortunately, I didn't become a nun, but I definitely found my passion in social work and what I call the helping field.
That's beautiful. What is your ethnic or racial background?
So, of course, I'm always going to say I'm Mexican, and because I was born in Mexico. But as things are evolving in my personal life, I can tell you, of course, I have some Native American in me. Of course, I have some Black in me. And that's something that was very interesting when we came to that conclusion with my family. Because as we know, colorism is real in our families. Racism is real. And I remember when I was talking to my mom about how my sister had sickle cell and then my aunt had sickle cell and how that potentially could be a trait within the Black community. And then later came in to find out, you know, how Black slaves were brought into Veracruz, which is a south state in Mexico, which is close to actually Michoacán. So it's like having those conversations with my family, with my mom, and even with my grandma, which my grandma to this day is not having it about it. Like she's just that we're not having that conversation. But it was just, it's interesting how we are a melting pot. We have a little bit of everything. And the cool thing is that especially like for us, we grew up in Oak Cliff, where we had, at least for my community, it was a lot of Latinos and Black. And then it was when I went to Tamu that I also had like, you know, Asian and the white community come into play. But I think for me, it was very interesting to grow up with the Black community because it was because being in Oak Cliff that gave me that opportunity. Because if I would have stayed with my relatives in Ennis or Wilmer or have moved to another state in like Illinois and also the city of Chicago or even California, I would not have had that same experience. And to connect with the community that has experienced so much hardship, it really humbles me and also lets me know that it's a struggle, but within it comes so much persistence. It comes so much of when community comes together. I think that's one of the things that I have learned so closely from the Black community is when community comes together, the impact that brings. And so like being able to see that, definitely for me that I do work in the immigrant community, gives me that hope. Gives me that aspiration, lets me know that, you know, even though there's things that take so long and still to today, there's still things that we still are constantly working on. Definitely having that reminder is that community and how for me that I didn't have my grandparents here, my neighbors growing up were my grandparents, were grandma and grandpa. And even though, you know, and to me it was like when they passed away, it was a tremendously pain as if they were my grandparents. And even when I went to the service, I remember how, you know, they're Baptist. So their way of a service was completely different from my upbringing of a service. And so getting to experience how other individuals see death and more of a celebration of their life definitely gave me a different aspect of life. For sure.
So you kind of covered this question already, but do you have anything to share when it comes to like colorism appearing in your life?
And you're probably going to see it from some of my pictures. I always felt like I was the darker one in our family. My sisters were definitely a little bit lighter, especially the closer ones we were, the four oldest. And so to me, I always heard like Marie, Olga and Obdulia were the pretty ones because they were lighter complected. And I remember you were watching soap operas, novelas, and you always had the color eye one, the white complected, that was like the main character. And then we married, you know, the handsome, you know, color eye, white complected gentleman. And so it wasn't until maybe early 2000s that you start seeing a little darker complected women that started appear more on television. Univision took a while for that to happen. I mean, it even took longer for a woman of color even be an anchor for the news. And so seeing that, I think, and growing up with novelas from Televisa and then Univision, definitely didn't, at some point I felt like I wasn't being represented, I wasn't being reflected, and kind of gave you the aspect of you're not pretty enough. You know, there was moments where I personally, as a teenager, felt like I wasn't pretty enough. My skin was a little bit darker. My teeth were too big, you know, and it wasn't until later that I finally saw an actress that had a big smile. And because I remember I was at church one day and someone was taking a picture of me, one of the photographers. And I was thinking it was like my first communion or my confirmation. And he was like, "Don't smile. Your teeth are too big." And I was like, "Oh." And so then that always gave me that insecurity of like, oh, my teeth are too big. Or, you know, my sisters are the pretty ones. And so then after time passed, I saw an actress that had a big smile with big teeth. And I'm like, okay, she made it. So, you know, it's not ugly people. And then later, as I started being around the Black community and seeing myself as actually, I'm also light too, you know, and then when it going into TAMU, and it just, TAMU definitely gave me a different aspect of things and gave me a hope of a better world, because there you didn't have the typical problems that typical high schools had. Like there, everybody, it was like a melting pot. Everybody, you know, we hanged out with everybody. Nobody cared what you wear. Nobody cared. Like there was so many different things that I was like, oh, okay. So TAMU became like my safe space of like really evolving into who I was and who I wanted to be. And I had the chance to dress up in clothes that were different. And at least while I was there, I wasn't an oddball. And so even then it took me even more years after that because another thing that I had that was kind of like, was that I was in the shadows. I was undocumented, and there was a part of me that I couldn't share with a lot of folks. And so having to slowly come out of that shell and just fully came out and accepted myself, not just with the color of my skin, but also like my smile and my status. And then being around folks that share those same experiences, that like, hey, colorism is real. And it was like, oh, wow. Like, okay, so I'm not the only one that had that experience in their family, or undocumented folks were coming out of the shadows and saying, undocumented, unafraid. And it was just like this whole revolution that happened around me in my 20s. And it definitely like impacted me. And that's something that I'm having. So those conversations with my own mom, and telling her, hey, mom, like some comments that we say amongst ourselves are not correct. I mean, some comments about la piratita or can be, you know, to some extent bad, mom. We have to be careful with that, or being offended because you're calling an Indian. And I was like, why would you think that you calling on my roots is something that should be used as derogatory? It's like, that's not right. You know, so, and la negrita and just so many things that we're like, we have to be more conscious about it. We have to be more conscious because this is what we're giving our kids, and we have to be careful, because if not, then this is what we're passing on to them. So we have to change that, because that impacts me, mom. Feeling like I was darker skinned and I wasn't pretty enough, that affected me for quite some time. you know, like feeling like my teeth were too big, that affected me to a certain time. And so we don't want our kiddos to have that. We don't want them to grow up with that, because it's going to take them a good minute to grow away from that. And it's a pain that we don't, that it could be prevented. It's definitely a pain that could be prevented. And it's just by changing us and changing the way we talk and we do things.
Yeah. Well, that was wonderfully said, Sandra. What schools did you go to growing up?
So I went to Lisbon for a bit, went to John L. O'Brien Elementary School, then went to Bow Story. And then that's when I applied to Townview and was at Townview. From Townview, I went to Mountain View College. So that's when I learned that undocumented folks can go to school and then they can also get in-state tuition and all that good stuff. And because I went to Mountain View College, I learned about UNT Dallas. Excuse me. And that's where I actually received my bachelor's of science from UNT Dallas in 2015.
Cool. In what year did you move to Oak Cliff?
1996, August of 1996.
In what years did you live in Oak Cliff?
For about 25 years. In August, it'll be 25 years.
Yeah. So you still live in Oak Cliff now?
I still live in Oak Cliff.
In what areas of Oak Cliff did you live in?
I know that, so I'm close to South Oak Cliff. So I know that that potentially is considered probably the south of Oak Cliff. And it's mostly been around that same neighborhood. Even though we lived in, I remember when I was applying to DACA, we had to register all the addresses, and it was literally like 5-10 minutes away. I stayed around the same radius, which is just the southern of Oak Cliff, and that's where I was at with like Bow Story and South Oak Cliff. So it was just that community there by the VA, all of that good stuff.
How would you describe Oak Cliff as a community?
I think for me, I think it's definitely gave me the sense of community and the sense of belonging. In the sense that when I was in my community, as far as my house, you know, I had a couple of neighbors that were Latinos, but then I also had the Black community that I identified a lot with. And then there was moments where, like, if I wanted to be Mexican, have my Mexican tacos, we'll go to Jefferson. Oh, you were ready to do your quinceañera, or you were going to be part of a quinceañera as a dama, you would go to Jefferson and get your dresses and all that good stuff. And then this slowly, like, Oak Cliff was the place to be, because you had the fiesta, Monterrey, you know, you get your groceries and everything here. Like, I had aunts and uncles that lived in Ennis and Wilmer, and they all came to Oak Cliff to get their stuff. So I was like, don't you wish you lived here, though? So it's the, and for me, you know, Beckley and Sanger Park was the community park to go to. It was another park that we also went to and played soccer and all that. And then there was Loop 12, there was a park there that had a pool. Unfortunately, the pool has closed since then, but, you know, during the summers, that was a place you had your $2-3 and you can get in the pool, you know? So that also included part of our entertainment for the summer. So I think that it gave everything to me, for sure.
Very cool. How is Oak Cliff different from Dallas or other cities?
I think, like I shared, I think that aspect that it had, the Mexican culture, the Latino culture, that other cities wanted. You know, I remember that even when I got married, I learned that even in Fort Worth, there were still not a lot of Mexican places that could go to. They would still have to come over here and come to our bazaars and our stores to get some of their things that they wanted and needed. So I think we definitely, especially because of Jefferson, it created that entrepreneurs that had those spaces where they can open up shops and you can sell your items. And it was items that, you know, they were good quality for a low cost, that if you didn't have that connection to Mexico and where they would bring it to you, that's where you will go and get it. So I think that that's one of the things that offered to us.
Did you frequent any other neighborhoods besides Oak Cliff? Like you just said, you also lived in Fort Worth. Were there any other communities that you lived in?
I didn't live. I had friends and family there. No, I think. Well, I would go to Wilmer and Ennis, because that's where we had family. And so that was more like the outside little towns. And it was just visiting them. Except for a lot of part, it was just visiting. And definitely, there were not as some of the spaces I felt were not as welcoming to the Latino community as much as Oak Cliff was to us.
Definitely. What were some of your favorite spots in Oak Cliff, and do they still exist?
So I love fruit. Fruterias was a thing. So like going to Colorado Park and then across from it is La Fruteria Cano. That was like, even while I was pregnant, that was a place to go. It's still here. There was a couple of restaurants where they had like tortas. Gloria's, I love pupusa. So Gloria's used to actually be a little more south than where they are now. They're actually a little mom and pop place. Now they became like a whole huge restaurant. But at the time, I remember going there. There was a clinic we used to go. Now that clinic is no longer there. It became like a it's not a private school, but I think it's like a charter school. So that was bought out. The church. I don't longer attend as much St. James. I'm more of a Blessed Sacrament, which is not closer to H Street. Those are some of the spots that I remember we used, besides the grocery stores and all of that.
Did you or anyone that you know own their own business here in Oak Cliff?
Yes. My daughter's dad has a shop here in Oak Cliff. It's actually right next to Blessed Sacrament. There's a strip right there where they have like a bus station. And around the corner, there's actually two body shops, and they still are still there.
And he still owns them?
They rent it. They still rent it. So yeah, they still rent them.
Cool. And they haven't been displaced by like rent going up or something?
Does go up. Mm-hmm. It does. They have to have like multiple people now inside of the body shop just to make ends meet. So the space now has to be like divided amongst more just to be able to pay for the rent.
Okay. That's cool that he owns his own business. That's a big deal, you know? Mm-hmm. Can you describe a memorable historical event that happened here in Oak Cliff?
For me, what changed and impacted my life, of course, were the nuns, but also education. Education, I think is one of the things that definitely impacted me and to the point where I am now. And I think for Oak Cliff to be able to have like TAMU, a magnet program that offers so many opportunities and so many resources to students from low income, I think it's to me at that moment when I found out about it, when I walked into the school, I was like, I can't believe this school exists here. Like I can literally get in a dark bus and be here. You know, it doesn't take me that long to be here. And so for me, that was something that was, for my personal life, it was historical and life-changing for me, being able to have a school that was accessible to me, and that I wish that more schools were like, you know, that offer the same resources, the same connections, the same internship opportunities, and opportunities to travel and open my mind that there was more than Oak Cliff. You know, there was more than Dallas, there was more than Texas. And having that opportunity to go to other states and other cities definitely impacted me and impacted to me where it's like here that even now that I'm at LMESC, I always go back to those moments and I'm like, we need to be having those resources here because I know that how much that impacts and how much that changes the students and the students' families. To the point for me, for my family, and education is what definitely has impacted us to continue to be persistent in our lives in the midst of everything that has happened to us. And I remember when my sister was accepted to study in NYU in Abu Dhabi. And I was beyond proud because I was like, this is what education does. It empowers people and it changes people's lives forever. And the opportunity to not only study at because we always thought she was going to study in another state, but to have the opportunity to study in another country and have those life experiences and shows the persistency of her and her hard work and how she's now in another country for free, studying for the next 4 years. And so, and I can only say that it set the bar higher for now our kiddos to make sure that they're not just, you know, making sure they go to off to college, but they go off to the best college they can be in and have those experiences of living on campus and exposing themselves to different cultures, different languages, different food, impacts people, I think. So that started with one of us going to tell you.
I love how much you're bringing up Townview because I went there too, the Law Magnet.
Mm-hmm.
Which one were you in?
Education and Social Service.
That makes sense. That's perfect for you. Gosh. But yeah, Townview was really cool. I had such a culture shock going into college after being in that environment. And, you know, like just going to DISD schools in general, because most of my classmates, my peers were Black and Brown, and then got to college. I went to UNT in Denton, and it's a pretty diverse school considering, but even so, I was just like, well, there's no Black people here.
Mm.
But would you say that the Oak Cliff from present day, Oak Cliff in 2021, is different from the Oak Cliff that you grew up in? And if so, how?
Bishop Arts. I think having Bishop Arts is definitely different. It has definitely brought a different crowd, and definitely has pushed a lot of folks out. And that's the part that even though I'm not gonna say I don't go to Bishop Arts or I don't meet up people for coffee there. Usually like, oh, it's this, you know, I could have never imagined this was here. And I was like, yeah. I was like, but you know, the sad part is how it's pushing folks away. You know, it's how the sad part is like how it's increasing for some folks their rent or even their property tax. And so it's in that aspect, it's definitely different. I think, like I shared earlier, like it's pushing, you know, folks like my mom, my brother, and my sister to actually have to move out of Dallas and slowly move into the suburbs just because it's cheaper. My property taxes also continuously goes up and I'm just like, every time that I get it, it's just like, am I gonna be able to afford it? And so it definitely, that aspect has changed for sure, different crowd.
What's your vision for Oak Cliff?
I think for myself that I do work in immigration, I do work in education. I know we talk about being a welcoming city as a whole for Dallas, you know, or that we're pushing for our students to have a better education. I think it's also creating more of a community where our folks feel like they belong and that they want to come back into this community and they want to give back into this community. There's also folks that even though they grew up in Oak Cliff, once they get older, they move out. And I feel like part of it's because they didn't have that sense of belonging to it. It's not a lot of us that like are so passionate about continually being here and working here and all of this. And it kind of makes me think, what is it that's missing from them to feel like this is where they belong? They can definitely bring something to the table to, if there's something that they feel that is missing, how can we make it better? My vision is that that we empower our folks, our community folks, to feel like they belong here and that they, especially with my students, that they belong here and that this is where they should be and continue to have that push of like, keeping that the house that the family has, because even though it's difficult right now, you know, hopefully they're able to still be able to keep it and not lose their homes, and then for them to take pride in that house that they grew up in. As far as better education programs, I feel like TAMU should not be the only school that offers all the opportunities that TAMU had. I feel like all the schools should have the capacity. Sunset, Molina, Pinkston, Adamson should all have those same opportunities. There's no reason why they shouldn't.
And I think that, like, you know, the work that you're doing at LNESC really is making up for that gap that shouldn't be there. For Molina students, Pinkston, Sunset, trying to remember everybody that you all serve, but it's great work that you're doing there. And I'm so glad that you're there to be like an ally, advocate, and mentor for those kids. Let's see, now we're on the conclusion questions and we have 18 minutes. What does your family life look like recently?
Like I shared earlier, unfortunately, my mom is having to, and I think part of it, yes, unfortunate. I say unfortunate because I would like her to be here with me. But I also know that she enjoys having cows and chickens and having, you know, her own garden. She loves having her own tomatoes, her own bell peppers, her own strawberries. Her strawberries are out. We went this weekend and she has strawberries now. And so wishing her though that she was closer in, and that she felt like it was okay for her to still own her home and have her own garden here. Of course, she probably would not be able to have the animals here because they need a lot more space, but definitely that within itself is a toughy one. My brother having to move more to the suburbs than my sisters just because it's cheaper. So that definitely is different. Because of the work that I'm doing now, I'm not as involved in the church as I used to be. But I feel like I'm still involved in a sense in community, just in a different avenue. So that has definitely changed. And to me, when I think of family, I always think of community. So I'm always going to think about how has it evolved. And it has evolved into that I'm in a different crowd with different folks. I think it's evolving.
How has COVID impacted your family life?
In the beginning, it was a tough one because one of my sisters is a nurse. And like in the beginning, I was like, we were all kind of scared and we were all just very isolating from each other. You know, and I always mess with her because she, even though she's in the medical field, she doesn't do too much of mental health. So I always encourage her, hey, you should set up a couple appointments with at your hospital and, you know, to see your therapist. I'm good. But COVID hit and she still didn't want to go see her therapist, but she'll send me messages of just at the end of the day of her experience throughout the day. Some folks as young as, you know, her age were passing away. And her, like, that at the moment she was still going through nursing training. She's like, we are not trained for this. In no way or shape or form are we trained to see people die every day. Or the low of equipment. We're in a first world country. How come we don't have all the equipment that we need? How come the masks that we're using are not, you know? I remember one day I told my daughter, you know, I believe in God at this point. And if it is, it is. And I remember she loves white roses. So I went and I bought her some white roses and a watermelon. And I just went to see her. And I was like, here you go. Like, I love you. And we're going to get through this. And so I hugged her and she just poured down and we poured down together and we cried it out. And then I was like, well, what are you doing? And so I remember her just trying to share what are some of the things that she's trying to do to cope, kind of this, like her is like keeping up with the numbers, knowing as information is given out, what are some things that are being done and what are some things to prevent it and just, for her, it was like having hand sanitizer, having, you know, mask and all of that. And so it impacted that. And of course we couldn't see, like at first it was like, we definitely kept away from my mom because, you know, we were all like, my mom's older and we definitely, like for me, that I still wanted to be out in the community. I was still like trying to give out food. I was helping with food distributions out here with LNSC, where we're giving out certificates so they can buy food at La Michoacana. And so I'm more hands-on. And I knew that I was going to be more hands-on. And so that, like, kind of, I told my mom, we're going to have to keep our distance from you for a bit until we have a better sense of what it, all of this. And so then after that, my brother became COVID positive and his whole family became COVID positive. And we weren't able to see them for, like, you know, months. After a while, we decided, once I saw my sister, we slowly will come together, at least the six of us. But then once my brother became COVID positive, we isolated again. And so it definitely brought the dynamics to see of our family, because there was folks that were getting tested and folks that even right now getting the vaccine. And there's some of us that are still like, didn't want to get tested. Some of us are against the vaccine. And it was very interesting to see some of, especially one of my younger sisters, because I felt like the younger she was, the more she should be like all about it, right? And it was interesting to see how she had a very conservative thought about that. And so, and even about getting tested and all of that. I think it also brought us to see the resilience. I saw the growth within my own sister that was a nurse. The growth, the whole experience definitely humbled her and definitely show her the more passion that she had for nursing. My other sister, definitely, she was just graduating from UNC Dallas, and it gave her definitely a sense of more that she wanted to do something in the nonprofit sector. And she actually, once the snowstorm happened, she was one of the leads in water distribution to apartment complexes. And I was able to be part of that project. And we were able to deliver over 500 pallets of water to apartment complexes that did not have running water. Some of them still do not have drinking water. And so that impacted her into the sense of what she wants to do now, as far as in her career path. And then within all of this, we also had the Black Lives Movement going on. And then even my sister, who is in another country, saw how that impacts the world as a whole and how there's much work that needs to be done, not just in the United States, but in other countries that are still experiencing a lot of racism. And so definitely a lot of growth internally. I saw that for my siblings. I saw that even for my daughter. In a personal level, having to be more at home with her, spending more time with her. And her really, because we were used to be go, go, go. I remember the previous year, I had been to at least 12 different cities, just doing work around immigration, work with my students. And my daughter and I sometimes would travel with me, sometimes she couldn't. And so now having to have a year where we're just at home, and it was just you and I. And we're spending a lot more time over cooking together. She became all involved about baking, and she was seeing the Black Lives Movement going on, and my sister's coming and talking about it. And even then, I saw that growth within her about, you know, potentially not. She grew up saying she was going to be an astronaut, but then slowly changing it. So maybe that's not something that I want to do anymore. I feel like I want to do something that makes much of a difference. And now she's talking about doing, you know, law schools and all of that. So that impacted her as a whole, and also gave her some time to spend time with herself. And one of the things that in a personal level for me, when she shared at first, you know, like, I think I'm bisexual. And then after spending some time with it, you know, Sharon, I think I'm lesbian. And so it impacted me in a personal level to the point I was like, oh, I don't know how to support you. I know that this is a community that is definitely marginalized a lot and goes through a lot. And so having to also learn more about it was very interesting for me, because I grew up very Catholic. You know, I grew up believing, you know, that this is a sin, and but now you have someone that you love and care for. And I just wanted to know, how can I best support her? What are the tools and all of that? So it has definitely been a year of growth all around for me, for the people I love and I care about. And, but it's good. I think it's good. We're resilient. And there's a reason why we're still here, right? So, but yeah, that's definitely seeing my family grow. It's been amazing. A great year of blessings.
What's your daughter's name?
Judith.
Judith, how old is she now?
She's about to be 12.
Gosh, yeah. She's already finding out these things about herself. That's so insightful at that age. And Sandra, I just want to commend you on like the kind of parent that you are, that she felt safe enough to tell
you. Yeah.
I'm getting like emotional. So many people are like that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, trust me. It was, as I was reading articles and I was reading books and I was talking to friends about it, and it just, I'm not gonna lie, I was scared at first. I was super scared. There was nights I would go home crying, you know, go to sleep crying, because I was like, how am I gonna support her? How am I gonna be that mom that she needs? And I went back to therapy. I was telling my therapist, I'm having a really hard one with this one. I feel like I don't have the tools I need, you know? And so she was just like, you're gonna get them. Know who you are, you're gonna figure it out. So just be confident that you are, and you keep doing what you're doing. And I think the fact that you created that safe space for it to happen like that, and for her to trust you enough, and for her to have that space to feel like she can express herself and grow and get to know herself, speaks a lot. So I was just like, wow. And so, yeah, and she started going to therapy also to also like slowly grow into it. She started, she had her hair cut, and it her demeanor changed a lot. Cause in the beginning I seen her like a lot more depressed and I was really worried. But after going to therapy and creating that safe space where she could cut her hair, dress the way she wanted to dress, definitely I saw that in her. I saw that change and that confidence. And now I'm a little more at peace for sure.
It's just so beautiful. Can't do. If you could go back and tell your younger self one thing, what would you tell yourself?
Don't rush too much. I feel like I rush at such a young age. I rush too much into getting married and starting a family. And I wish I would have taken a little more time to enjoy college and live the whole college experience of actually like living on campus. I think that's one of the things that I if I could go back, I would probably would love to have more experience in college and living the college life. And really enjoying that growth that comes from it, you know, that growth that comes from being on your own and doing your own thing. So not rushing it. Don't rush it. Take your time.
Do you keep in touch with friends or mentors from the community?
Yes. So my community from TAMU was Vicky Mercurio. And to this day, I still reach out to her. She still calls me once in a while. Recently, she called me. We had a call like maybe 2 weeks ago. She left TAMU after I left. She actually was my daughter's teacher for a year. She would come and work with my daughter at my house. She actually has a grandson that's around the same age as my daughter. So she goes and volunteers at Harry Stone and has an opportunity to also see my daughter. So that's a true blessing to be able to have her in my life. She was my mentor, my role model. My mom, even to some extent, is like, what do you think? She's like your mom or what? And I was like, no, I really cared, because she has continuously teach me so much, still teaches me to this day. And so truly blessing to have her. Vero, who was also one of my high school friends, is still around. We still touch bases. From the community, church, a couple of my friends, one of them, Debbie, that is still my comadre, touch bases here and there. So a couple of close ones.
Is there anything you feel that I might have missed and you would like to talk about it now?
I think I love what you're doing. I think this is amazing. I think the importance of storytelling is important. I think it's powerful. I think that it gives us the opportunity to share what we felt and saw from our lenses. And so I truly believe that this is amazing work. I think that this is important for folks to have the opportunity to do this. So thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to share my story, my experiences, the beautiful things that OCLIF had for me. And I remember when you said, if you can share a picture, I hope I can find this picture of us when we were little kids and the first time we went to the Dallas Zoo. And having those things that were so close to us definitely gave us those experiences that changed our lives for sure.
Wonderful job. You did such a touching interview. Thank you, Sandra. So could we go ahead and conclude the interview then?
Yes.
Okay, I'm gonna stop recording.
Bien sabido que no es fácil ser amigo de la ruina. Aquí vengo tras de un sueño que no lo he logrado aún. Que no lo he logrado aún. De allá donde soy, quedó una casita. Y ando trabajando a dejarla bonita. Tengo la ilusión de llegar a ser viejo y ahí pasar los días. Me presta vida.